Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling into the happier Friday 5 o'clock happy hour, and I'm happy to have been joined by a fine guest and a friend and a brand new host right here on the Shaw 540 AM 101 FM, and of course Devil Radio. He's former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Jim, welcome to your new studio, sir.
Glad to be with you. It is Friday. I've got my days right this time.
It's a glorious Friday.
It's a beautiful, glorious Friday afternoon. Delighted to be with you and Brian and the entire group here.
Well, we got you working overtime this week.
Well, this is a good thing. It's a good thing. Work is a good thing also, right? For America, for everybody. And looking forward to this afternoon and also to tomorrow morning as well.
Well, Jim, tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock Central Time, will be the launch, the inauguration of Morning Cannolis with James Santel.
That's exactly it.
So I like what you've decided.
I think it was a collaborative effort to come up with the name. The production people, the promotion people did a good job.
Have you heard your show open?
I have not, so I'm going to be surprised when Brian does this, and looking forward to it. We can certainly do that if we've got the opportunity here today, but I'm all into excitement and surprise as well.
Well, we can't make the audience wait till tomorrow morning, right? Although I'm sure they'll tune in for the fine broadcast. Mm-hmm. Fancy Brian, do we have the capability?
Yeah, give me just a moment here.
Okay, absolutely. We're looking forward to it. 9 a.m. tomorrow until 11 o'clock, and lots of good things going on, as always.
What's the lead, counselor?
So the lead is going to be sort of a summary of significant things during the week, and then we're going to spend the second hour going into a little deeper dive on one of those issues. Unfortunately, this week, it's got to be about guns, and specifically what the Supreme Court's going to be doing not too soon, probably a few weeks or so, when it comes to the capacity of Americans constitutionally to carry guns beyond their homes. So it's our case out of New York called Bruin, and every indication that our Supreme Court is going to tell you, Mike and everybody else, you've got a constitutional right to carry weapons without any government oversight, any government over authority to carry a weapon down the streets of beautiful Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Jim, at first I thought you were being evasive, and then I was going to ask for permission to treat you like a hostile witness, but you got around to it. So there's going to be talk about guns. It has dominated the headlines, but for the eager, for the anticipatory, for a little tease, tomorrow morning, Jim Santel, tune in right here on the Shaw, 9 o'clock, and it's also going to play out on Devil Radio 92.7 and TTN 1580 AM. But here's what the show open's going to sound like. Listen closely, Mr. Santel.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
And he's right here with me in the Shaw Studios. So, little Doobie Brothers,
little Mike McDonald. Could it be any better? Brian, thank you for that. Mike, thank you for the opportunity. Looking forward to it with great delight.
My favorite morning beverage, right? Irish coffee.
Right, it is. And I think our favorite afternoon dessert, morning dessert, is cannolis. So the tradition continues, very much suggested by you, but a wonderful opportunity. And looking forward to call-ins also. Lots of people hopefully tuning in and asking questions, making comments, as we always do, about topical things in the news.
There are some eager listeners. People have been asking for the time. Again, 9 to 11, a two-hour inauguration. And I'm going to be at the farmer's market tomorrow morning. Don Brown's going to do his fine show this week in Waukesha at 8 o'clock from the farmer's market. And I'm going to be there all morning giving away another radio. We're going to give away radios. We're in the radio business.
It's a good thing. Why not?
You need a radio. So many people, if I'm outside the car, what I realized, Jim, I don't have, like, I used to have, like, four radios in the house. I don't have a single, like, portable boomboxy kind of anything.
Right. A thing with dials on it where you can volume like, and change
tuner
the frequency.
540 AM
right,
or tuner
right.
to 101 FM,
right.
something like that.
We just don't have those around anymore. I remember my father's radio in the garage with the Milwaukee Braves on when I was growing up. That was my sense of radio. Absolutely. That was my sense of radio, and it was the source of great entertainment growing up. Should still be.
My first, Crudy's first radio, a Spider-Man head radio I got for opening a savings account at the Sun Prairie Bank, and I also got to meet one of my childhood heroes, a local guy from Madison, Andy North, U.S. Open winner. I was a golf kit.
It was a golf kit and also a radio. They gave out lamps. Remember that? Banks would give out lamps when you opened up a savings or a checking
account. You probably
account.
Opened more bank
right.
accounts
well,
than
I don't
mostly
know.
Closed bank accounts, Jim.
That may or may not have been the case, but good times and still good times in 2022 and beyond.
Now, Jim, you're from Waukesha.
I'm from Waukesha.
This is home for you.
Absolutely. Spent a lot of time right on these streets. That's why I'm delighted to be back here once again this afternoon and on a regular basis in the future. I live in Brookfield. But for the fact that I came in from Milwaukee and facing a little bit of traffic, I would have been here even earlier. But this is home. And Waukesha County is the place where I grew up in public schools. I plainly spent most of my life growing up, not just listening to the Braves on my father's radio, but also but biking around here and being a part of the community. I've spent some time right down the street here, believe it or not, at the Waukesha Civic Theater, sometimes on stage. So this is my part of the world, too. Some other discussion we can have at some point down
well,
the road.
So. We're talking, Jim. Right, what are some of your more famous roles? You shared that with our SAG actor in the other room, Fancy Brian.
I did, absolutely. So as late as last March, I was on stage there, a thing called the Language Archive, all about language and the way that we use words to convince people of certain things. Relationships are built on them. A number of years ago,
are all built on sex, Jim.
Well, we all have our predicates, right? We all have our reasons for talking out loud.
That references back to a Dom joke yesterday, but please continue, sir.
Many years before that, I was delighted to be here in Waukesha. I played, perhaps unbelievably, the caustic racist prosecutor in a wonderful production of To Kill a Mockingbird. And still one of the most important, significant things I've ever done on the stage locally, and delightful cast, great friends, and a really compelling story, obviously, continues to this day. It's still on Broadway. It's moving around the country there and a few other things from time to time, also right down the street here at Waukesha.
Well, if you go down south, they're still trying to ban the book, aren't they,
Absolutely.
Jim?
Absolutely. Plainly, in many ways, the times of To Kill a Mockingbird have not disappeared in America, and we can find those venues all around. So important stories of that kind. Great believer in language and talking as we are doing right now and having good conversation even with people who may not agree with us, but also sometimes telling stories as you do, as Brian does, as Dom does, everybody does.
Oh, we tell some stories around here. Mostly fish stories.
And fish stories are good, too, because they all convey something about who we are as people, individuals, what our community is all about, and can make us think, right? Even if we see something on stage, hear something on the radio that offends us, that makes us question whether or not what we think is true, that's a good thing. And we should always be sort of on the edge, if you will, thinking about whether everything we believe is true.
Oh, you're so polite, Jim. No, I offend people. You are often polite. My fine guest, James Santel, he is a host in his own regard. The inaugural Morning Cannolis with James Santel tomorrow, 9 a.m. right here on the Shaw and Devil Radio. And Jim, I got to ask you, Peter Nefaro, yes. The economist, he's got his PhD right. in economics.
It's a trade guy, right?
And he's been subpoenaed recently, and apparently he was indicted and arrested and arraigned today and complained mightily about being put in cuffs, being thrown in jail. And the interesting thing, at least reportedly, the judge told him, do not act as your own counsel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, he's in government, he's a lawyer. But then I read later in the reporting, Jim, He's not a lawyer. He's an economist. And he also filed his own federal lawsuit seeking to, what, block the J6 subpoenas.
Absolutely, right?
Well, you know, I've dabbled a little bit in, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking, but I've never filed a federal lawsuit. Right. Jim, I would know better. I'd hire a capable counsel like you, sir.
Well, and absolutely, the judge has very right to admonish him, or at least encourage him to get an attorney who knows what she or he is doing. It is a significant part of our
Rudy doing these
right,
days?
Right, you know, he still has his license in many places, so you still possibly give him a call as well. You can go into court civilly and represent yourself without being an attorney. God bless America, right? That's part of our national fabric. You can also represent yourself if you're a criminal defendant, as he now is, based upon this indictment coming out of the grand jury in Washington, D.C. Just yesterday. Is it a wise thing to do? It is very unwise to do for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is you need that separation. You need somebody to sit you down from time to time and say, let's talk strategically, wisely about what is best in your best interest. You just can't do that when you are the very person whose interests are at stake. And I think all my good defense friends would tell you the same thing, not because they want the work, but because it's just a very, frankly, stupid thing to do.
Yeah. I have spent lots of money and gotten lots of great advice that's often gone unheeded. My fine guest, James Santel, here in the Shaw. He'll launch his big program tomorrow at 9. Hope you tune in for it. And I'm going to sneak off to the Friday Night Live in just a little while, Jim. And you're going to give me a little cover fire, a little early preview of the type of show you might do tomorrow morning. But I got to ask you, as we sneak off to a break here, Jim, did you take encouragement from the DOJ's indictment of Navarro? Now, the charge, contempt of court, it's a misdemeanor, 2 counts, 2 years in jail. I mean, that's a serious threat. The man's in his 70s. He's the guy referencing his age. But do you think this will move the needle? Do you think suddenly Peter Navarro's feeling all kinds of heat to cooperate?
The answer is yes. And plainly, this also sends a message to those other people who might be out there thinking, as perhaps the Bannon situation also indicated, should be thinking long and hard about the prospects of not appearing, not showing up. You may be finding yourself in the receiving end of a federal grand jury indictment. It does move the needle, absolutely.
Now, that's not the coach in there. That's the producer. If he starts giving you the bun sign, that means you got a break. Come back with us. You're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. My fine guest and co-devil, James Santel, former U.S. attorney and host in his own regard. Come right back.
I don't like your attitude.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm just a caveman.
The Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. You made it to the weekend, folks. It's nearly here. I got a fine guest in studio in the Shaw. He's James Santel, former U.S. attorney. He is going to host a brand new show, Morning Cannolis with James Santel, Saturday mornings right here. And in case you miss it, got something going on Saturday. We're going to replay it on Sunday mornings at the very same time, 9 o'clock. Make a note of it. Tune in for it. Jim, we've already talked about the fact that, you know, after you were a little evasive, you got to the point and you told us you're going to talk about guns and some rulings coming down from the U.S. Supreme Court. But, Jim, all of my attention next week is going to be on the January 6th yes. committee hearing. And it's going to start on Thursday in prime time. And, Jim, I know I'm quite hopeful. I had high expectations for Mueller's public testimony. I had high expectations for the impeachment. And I've been let down a couple times, but Jim, I'm looking for a summer blockbuster. Will this be the one?
Right, and the fact that they've found some time in prime time is significant. It means that obviously they recognize, too, that there does have to be, without being inappropriate here, there's got to be some theater here. They've got to attract you. They've got to attract me. They've got to keep the American public attentive. And so I am very hopeful by that simple fact that there are people on Capitol Hill, not necessarily our electeds, but the staff behind them, who are doing an awful lot of work right now to ensure that that initial presentation, that program that is going to happen in prime time next week, is, if not a capital B blockbuster, pretty darn close. They plainly need to tell maybe not the entire story, but need to do the big arc to make certain that people don't get lost in the minutia. This can't be specifics about, you know, a specific door that's opened or a singular phone call, unless those phone calls are from the president and communications of a real significant level that indicate that there are people in the White House, including the president.
Find me 11,780 votes. You think we'll hear a phone call of that sort?
That kind of conversation. Every reason to believe that this committee, the chair has already indicated there are going to be some surprises. So he knows a little bit of producing about theater on this, that there are going to be some revelations about things that they know. They have talked to hundreds and hundreds of people. Not all of them subpoenaed, many of them voluntarily. Some of them staff of people in Congress, others in the White House who were there for these conversations. Every reason to believe that they're going to pick and choose some of the most important and compelling of those, maybe even get some of those witnesses to talk about what they heard. They were quite literally, to steal from Hamilton, they were in the room when it happened, right? And so those are the kinds of people we need to see next Thursday night. And there are going to be other times in the following days and weeks during the times when you and I are working, right, in the middle of the day, also attracting.
I'll still be listening.
Yeah, still be listening, right? And probably
play them on the radio for people.
There you go.
Turn them on the stream.
Exactly. And also attracting that audience and maybe filling in some of the details along the way. That's good artistry. And again, I don't mean to be flip about this at all. That's the kind of thing that was missing, frankly. Certainly in the Mueller presentation, other things that Congress has done. This cannot be just the political charades that we sometimes see on both sides of the political aisle. This has got to be a presentation. Every reason to believe that it will be, because you don't have in this committee those people who are just shouting at each other.
The Jim Jordans.
Exactly. Right.
Perrys, etc.
Precisely. You don't have those folks. The Republican, this is a bipartisan committee. The people who are on that committee, you've got two Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, who are all in on this. They recognize the significance of this. And so Benny Thompson, the chair, can turn to them and say, I'm now going to ask the congressman from Wyoming, to interview this next witness, make some statements, perhaps. Let's have Mr. Kinzinger also do that kind of thing.
I don't want to see, on day one, any public witnesses. Right. I got to tell you, I want a predictable, dynamic outcome, which may require pre-recorded materials, mm-hmm. if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
I want very little live presentation. I mean, you can pitch it to the mm-hmm. to the videotape, but get out of the way.
Right.
The visuals, mm-hmm. the words, they should already be on the tape, and they should be ready to play it.
Right.
And it should roll out as a two-hour presentation,
right.
And it should captivate us. And we better not even leave to use the bathroom or get popcorn.
Absolutely. The subtitles need to be there too, right? The language that's coming in, conversations on the phone while our Capitol is being attacked. And then you've got the subtitles as well, just in case somebody has not got their volume turned up high. That kind of dramatic presentation, exactly. And what does that do? Again, the Congress does not have the capacity to indict anyone, right? But this is about telling the American public what happened, not just on January 6th, but plainly what happened in advance of that. Who organized this at the highest levels? Who organized this at the medium levels? We know some of that already based upon the indictments. We saw the visual images. Remember how compelling it was during the impeachment when we saw for the first time some of those videos of things we had never seen before? I think, Mike Ruth, that's what you're looking for, right? The things we maybe haven't seen, at least not in context, that's what they can do next Thursday. That will get America to tune in. And even if not everything is completely apparent, if there is enough of that, America will tune in the following days and weeks as well to do the subsequent exposition of the fill-in, if you will, for the greater story.
Jim, it is my strong gut feeling that the former president, Donald Trump, and his minions are going to be out there putting out a counter-narrative in real time constantly. It's fixed, it's rigged, it's partisan. Jim, do you think that will have a blunting impact?
It will certainly be out there. We know that those plans are already underway. They've been announced publicly on social media, other places. It is anticipated that that will happen. My recommendation as a trial lawyer would be to avoid that kind of noise, that noise out there. Do what you need to do. You know it's coming. Do not play to that. Do not try to respond to that. And know that yours is the show that people are tuning in to see. When you're in trial, likewise, you're not concerned about what's going on the steps outside of the courthouse. You're concerned about what the witnesses are doing in that courtroom, how the judge is responding, most importantly, what the jury is reacting to. They're the ones you want to play to.
Well, the show's right here. It's called The Devil's Advocates. I got a fine co-devil. He's taking the helm. He is James Santel. He will launch his own show tomorrow morning, Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. It will launch at 9 o'clock, 9 to 11, Saturday, and a replay on Sunday. And I'm going live. A brand new event. We're rolling it out tonight from the Friday Night Live in Waukesha. So, Jim, I appreciate you taking over. Fancy Brian, have a great weekend. You all keep listening because I'm going to be doing live radio again in like 20 minutes.
Little dreamer.
It's all a big lie. It's a big con game.
.com.
I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling devil's advocates.
And good afternoon once again. This is Jim Santel in the bottom half hour of the afternoon here on Devil's Advocates radio program. I'm sitting in for the next 30 minutes or so for my good friend and colleague Mike Crute, who is headed to another venue in Waukesha to do some more broadcasting tonight. Looking forward to that as well. Delighted to be with all of you and follow up to our discussion in the first half an hour of this hour. Let me go back to a couple of things I promised Mike I would chat about before he departed to the next venue, and that is this Peter Navarro indictment today. As we discussed right before the break, Peter Navarro, a former trade representative and economics guru for the Trump administration, was indicted yesterday by a federal grand jury who returned a two-count indictment. Actually, the indictment was returned today, but plainly the grand jury doing some work on this for many days in advance of today. Two counts alleging contempt of Congress. Why two? One of them goes to the fact that Mr. Navarro simply did not appear for a planned deposition before the committee, which hundreds of other people have already done. The second count is respect to documents. He was also asked by the committee, by virtue of its subpoena, a very legal way of asking for those documents, asked by the committee to produce those documents. He failed to do that as well. And so how have we seen this before? We've seen this before because we know that a similar thing happened with respect to a fellow named Mike Bannon, who is also a senior advisor to the president. Bannon himself indicted by a federal grand jury, the same kind of thing, simply failing to show up in front of the committee. His trial in a federal district court on those charges scheduled for next month, so some additional entertainment and some focus for America going on very, very soon. But Peter Navarro, again, today indicted, the announcement of his indictment today. Also, as Mike said before the break, actually appeared in front of a federal judge today. His arraignment, he plainly pled not guilty. Significantly, Mr. Navarro representing himself. He can do that, as we said right before the break. Why? Because he's a citizen, a resident of the United States of America. You can do that, even if you're not an attorney, although the judge encouraged him to get counsel, as we said before the break, not an especially good idea. We also know beyond that that there are two other matters that are still pending out there, right? We know as well that the same committee has also recommended to the United States Department of Justice, to the Attorney General, two other people, because we know that from the announcements from the committee itself and the decisions made by the full House of Representatives. One of those referrals, likewise, for the possibility of prosecution for contempt, Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff. That matter is still pending in front of Merrick Garland in his inbox. And this fellow named Dan Scavino, who did a lot of communications for the Trump administration. Likewise, same pattern with Bannon, same pattern with Navarro. Failed to appear, failed to produce documents. And so those referrals are still pending. So out of the four, we have two indictments, one going to trial next month, Peter Navarro plainly going to trial at some point down the road, two others still pending. Now, why do I talk about all that? It sounds like it's very much in the weeds, and sort of it is, but it indicates, number one, that the committee is serious about its work, its attention to people appearing on a regular basis. We know that the committee has already taken a look and has interviewed hundreds of other people, most of whom have cooperated voluntarily, produced a lot of documents. And as Mike and I chatted in the first half hour of this hour, a lot of that's going to be the product of their work. We're going to see that next week, beginning next Thursday, the announcement from Benny Thompson, the chair, that in prime time, you can tune in. You can tune into this radio station as well and hear the actual presentations made live by the committee members about what their findings have been to this point, anticipating that the committee will also probably, almost certainly, before the fall elections, issue a report of some kind summarizing all of this. But this, I would offer, maybe not an easy way to understand what this has been all about, but the first time since the interviews of those police officers way back in July of 2021, when the Capitol Police appeared, the first time the committee has once again gone public with information about what it is doing and what it has done. And so we look forward to that. Now, why do I raise all that? Why is that significant beyond just the things that the committee is doing? Well, we know as well that there are other matters going on in front of the United States Department of Justice. It's very, very easy, if you will, to confuse all of this. This coming out, plainly, of Congress, a referral to the executive branch, to 9th and Constitution, which is where the Department of Justice is, and a criminal prosecution coming out of that. What is the related story that we talked about on Wednesday here on this show? And Dom and Mike were here, and we chatted about the other big news story also involving Peter Navarro. It's related. It's much related to this, but it's slightly discreet. It's slightly different from this. And what is that other story? And that is this, that Peter Navarro, a couple of days ago, in addition to continuing to appear on various cable networks and talk about his particular plight, also released a draft, if you will, of a civil lawsuit that he was bringing against the very committee that had referred him for criminal prosecution. Following all of this, he had released that draft, and in the course of that writing that he was going to submit to and file with a federal district court, a civil action, presumably asking that the court stop the committee from doing what it's doing, in the course of that pleading, Mike Navarro made a significant revelation, the one that we'd sort of been talking about for many, many weeks and months. And that revelation was that he had also been subpoenaed by a federal grand jury to talk about January 6th. Again, you might think, well, gee, isn't that exactly what the House committee did? The answer is it's different because you've got different venues, you've got different branches of government, and it confirmed as we talked on Wednesday that there is also a pending investigation led by the Criminal Division, led by Merrick Garland and others at Maine Justice, investigating independent of the House committee investigating whether there is any criminal conduct. And I would offer the fact that Peter Navarro is himself being subpoenaed to provide documents in that matter, and that much related but different matter, before another grand jury. That confirms that indeed the Department of Justice is looking, as Merrick Garland said a number of weeks, if not months ago, looking at the highest levels to who was in charge of, who was making decisions about what was happening on January 6th. So once again, this is a contempt charge. He has been indicted, as has Bannon, for the same kind of thing. The U.S. Department of Justice, we think with a good amount of certainty, is also pursuing a related but different investigation about who is responsible for January 6th, not focused upon the failure to appear in front of Congress, but focused upon what happened on January 6th, before January 6th, and after January 6th. And that's why that information also coming from Peter Navarro is very significant this week. And that is why we continue to look not only to what the committee is going to be presenting next week, but to down the road, if other people at the higher levels, again, Peter Navarro is not at the highest level, plainly a senior advisor to the president. He had this role as a trade advisor, an economics guy, but also undeniably, as the committee itself indicated, conversations with the president, strategy decisions with others about how to perpetuate the so-called big lie that, in fact, the election was stolen. It was not, as we know. What did he do to advance this theory that has electors
senators in Wisconsin and six or seven other states putting together false documents, sending those to the archives and sending those to the Congress, purporting to represent actual electoral votes. How was that going to play out in Congress, perhaps with the vice president and the certification that he presided over of the electoral votes? What do you do? All those things, all those machinations, that's what plainly the Department of Justice is now looking at. And the fact that Peter Navarro in the West Wing at that time is the subject of that grand jury subpoena, admittedly, not for his testimony, but for documents, indicates that they're looking at higher level people. And as we've talked before, those indictments that have been issued previously, hundreds of people, 400, 500 people already charged, even as late as yesterday, two additional people for their mere presence in the Capitol building on January 6th. You've got that tranche, that huge number of people indicted by grand juries, being tried successfully by the Department of Justice, also a lot of them pleading guilty. Then you've got this second tranche, this second level of people who are responsible for organizing them, the Proud Boys, the Three Percenters, some of these other folks who may or may not have been there. And then you've got this higher level, which I would offer to you are the Peter Navarros, the people in the Wyndham Hotel, the people perhaps in the West Wing at the time, who were engaged in conversations certainly on January 6th and probably before and after that as well. What does that grand jury investigation look like? Again, not the one related to contempt, but the investigation that Peter Navarro has revealed to us now by virtue of his grand jury subpoena for these documents. What is that all about? Plainly, asking for information. We know, in addition to the subpoena to Peter Navarro for his documents, that very significantly, the U.S. Department of Justice has also asked the committee for all of its transcripts. And again, once again, this, I know this sounds very complicated. Lots of things going on here. It's all related to the same kind of thing, right? The same subject matter, but different parts of government doing different kinds of things as they're assigned constitutionally. The Department of Justice, as a part of what we now know as its investigation, presumably its criminal investigation, also asked for committee transcripts of things that they have heard, that the witnesses have provided to them during the course of its month-long investigation. Why do you do that? Well, we talked about this a little before. You don't do that simply because you're going to predicate a separate set of indictments based exclusively on those transcripts. But you do want to find out about what everybody has said. And if you are, for example, looking to confirm or deny the accuracy of somebody who's provided a statement to the FBI in your separate criminal investigation by the Department of Justice, if you're looking to verify or refute the testimony of somebody else who's already appeared before this other grand jury, and you've got these other statements that they may have made in another forum, that is not only extremely helpful, it's entirely appropriate for the U.S. Department of Justice to be looking at that and investigating that as it puts together this larger examination of who was responsible, I would offer, at the very highest levels of responsibility before, during, and after January 6th. A lot going on here, a huge amount going on here. We know as well, to add to this mix, we've talked about this before, Lisa Monaco has also confirmed that the Department of Justice is looking at another key piece of this that I mentioned already, and that is this notion that, as a part of this overall plan put together by this fellow named John Eastman, some other attorneys as well, this Eastman memorandum, this notion that there's a consolidated effort, has many different aspects to it, to basically return the election, return it over, if you will, overturn the results of the election, turn this away from Congress and get it back to the states. This mechanism was in part relying upon the notion that individual electors would come forward and falsely represent that they were the true electors from, say, Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and other states that were in play seriously during the last election. And they, as we know, as I said before, they sent those documents off, from my perspective, making false statements on behalf of themselves and perhaps others about what happened. And those documents are now the subject, those actions by those false electors here in Wisconsin and other places are also, we know that they're also the focus of an investigation, a federal criminal investigation by Maine Justice, that confirmed by Lisa Monaco, the Deputy Attorney General of the United States of America. We'll talk about more of that and take your calls as well after the break. More this afternoon on Devil's Advocates. Jim Santel sitting in the last moments of the afternoon, and we'll do more of that discussion right after the break.
Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
And we're back for the final moments of the afternoon. My name is Jim Santel. I'm sitting in for these final moments for Mike Crute, who is headed off here in Waukesha to do some additional broadcasting tonight, right there among the American public, our Wisconsin public, our Waukesha public. Looking forward very much to that as well. Before we talk more about things going on locally and statewide and nationwide, we always take phone calls. And so I promise Mike, as I'm sitting in the final moments here of the afternoon hour, that we'd take at least one or two phone calls, and we'll do that. I know, CJ, you've been sitting on the phone here patiently for a long time, wanted to chat with us about a particular subject matter that you have. Why don't you go ahead, CJ, and chat with us?
Well, thanks for taking my call, James. I do call a lot, and some of my friends and family call me the truth detective.
All right.
The Devil's Advocate.
So what truth do you want to share with us today, CJ?
You know, I'm interested. You're well aware of January 6th. I think it took January 6th for Democrats to care about crime, because we can look in our own state street. Kenosha, as it burned. And Evers did nothing. So, I guess at this point, I really do. I wonder what will the Democrats run on? And then I have a specific question.
And that question would be what, CJ? You've got a specific question to ask about events in the public domain today.
You know, the grand jury for Sussman. I wonder if it'll be tainted and have high school kids that play on sports together. But regardless, John Durham got some very interesting information that I'd love to have your input on. Robbie Mook,
sure.
Who said that it was tied to Hillary. She approved the plan to go ahead with false information, and she knew it, and the campaign knew about it. So I'm wondering if the Devils will cover that information with the same, I guess, I don't know if it would be biased or unbiased, that you will with January 6th theater that's going to be put on.
And why don't we talk about non-bias in either direction? We'll talk about factual accuracy, right? So who's Robbie Mook? Robbie Mook is the former campaign director for the Clinton campaign, plainly a public figure in his own right. And as your listeners know, CJ, as you know as well, the reference points here are this. Not a grand jury, but it's a trial jury, obviously, that returned a verdict of not guilty as to Michael Sussman. A grand jury that previously had indicted, based upon Department of Justice presentations from John Durham, this fellow named Michael Sussman, who was an attorney either in his own right and also plainly on behalf of Democrats and sometimes the campaign itself, but came forward to the FBI with information about the Alpha Bank and about other things related to the Trump administration. And the point of the prosecution was that during the course of his discussion with one FBI agent as a part of that investigation, allegation. The allegation in the grand jury indictment, which the trial jury rejected, the allegation was that Sussman had committed a federal felony, had made a false statement about what? About who he represented. And the allegation was that, in fact, he represented the political side of the fence, maybe even the Clinton campaign, when, in fact, he maintained that he was there as a private citizen to offer this information about these connections between the Alpha Bank and the Trump campaign itself. We don't need to go into whether or not those specific allegations are true. History will write that down the road. What we do know in the end is that in the trial of this matter, there was testimony. Again, the trial ultimately, as I said, resulting in his acquittal. Basically, the jury, I think, saying, what are we doing here? Why is this a material false statement that should be in the federal court, prosecuted, admittedly, by an agent, by an officer, by an attorney of the Department of Justice, sent Mr. Sussman the message that, no, in fact, this is not a federal offense that you've committed, and so brought to a close that prosecution brought by John Durham. But along the way, Robbie Mook testifying about, again, things related to who made these decisions, if you will, for the disclosure and the decision, the approval, if you will, for information to be provided perhaps to the media about Alpha Bank, and providing some color along the way about communications between the media, among the staffers, and yes, indeed, some representation that the candidate herself was aware of the fact that the campaign was at least offering up this notion that there might be a connection here. I would offer to CJ that in the interest of non-biased review of this, if there is some criminal matter related to that particular thing, certainly the Department of Justice looks at that. They look at things without partisan view. And again, I am having been with the department for 30-some years, politics doesn't enter into those kinds of things. You hear things about politics, and that's what this is all about. But if in fact there was a false statement made by Robbie Mook, if there was some other thing that was imputed to others based upon that testimony, we would hear about it. What we do know is what he testified to. And it is interesting grist for further conversation. I would also offer that, you know what, as a part of politics in the 21st century, this kind of thing happens all the time. It is unfortunate. I probably agree with you in many ways, CJ, that it is unfortunate that our politics have gotten to the point where we do, in fact, look for things to discredit our opposing candidate. And those things can sometimes be real, sometimes have substance to them, sometimes have some real validity that go to your credibility and your electability, and other times do not. And there's no doubt that politics at a local level, a state level, and at a federal level often partakes of that. I would offer, based upon what I have seen in the media, again, I don't know anything more than you do, CJ, and others out there, that this representation, this testimony inside the Sussman trial that Robbie Mook gave is in that nature. That is describing kind of the inside baseball, if you will, about what political campaigns, in this case the Clinton campaign, may have done in connection with trying to articulate some other positions out there. And so, CJ, we appreciate your call. Look forward to talking with you down the road as well. As we move into our final minutes here, too, wanted to offer once again this invitation to all of our listeners this afternoon to join me again tomorrow morning. I'm going to be right back here in the Waukesha studio. We've got a program that's going to spend 2 hours, one of them addressing the specific kinds of news events. They're going to be legal. They're going to be government related, as CJ's question just indicated. Maybe sometimes brushing on politics as well. Hard to separate those things out. And then in the second hour, we're going to do a deeper dive in at least one of those, if not more of those issues. Needless to say, tomorrow we're going to be chatting an awful lot about guns, not just the things that you see in the media, but also we're going to be chatting about what the United States Supreme Court sometime in this month, maybe early next, is going to tell us in a case coming out of New York. The Supreme Court's perched to give us some additional insight into what the Second Amendment means. We're going to chat more about that. We're going to talk about a case authored by Antonin Scalia, many, many years ago, that gives us the predicate for that. And then take your phone calls throughout the tomorrow morning. We're going to be looking forward to all of that. It's a show that hopefully will attract your interest if you have interest, and I suspect all of you do, in those kinds of things. Very important, encouraging you very much to call in as CJ did today. We're going to be doing that tomorrow morning. But right now, we're going to take another break and come back and do the final minutes of the afternoon here on The Devil's Advocate. We'll be right back.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Don't mess with the devil, buddy.